Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, this is Nicola Comotti here at the 75th edition of the Venice Film Festival, and today I'm joined by Cindy Hulage and Ron Mann. You are part of, like, you're the mind behind the camera, and you're also the hands and the craftsmanship.
What's left?
What's left of my mind?
For Carmine Street Guitars. So, Ron, first thing first, I'd say, how did you end up actually deciding to make this film and portray Rick Kelly's baby, and of course, Cindy's work as well?
Sure. I was here in 2014 with a film called Altman, about director Robert Altman, and afterwards I thought I was going to make a film about Jonathan Demme, actually, who is, you know, an inspiring director and the most enthusiastic champion of outsider films. And I was planning a movie about Jonathan, and he got sick, actually. But the thing about Jonathan is he made a lot of music documentaries. And I thought, wow, you know, I've made all these movies about different subcultures, and I'd never made an actual film about music. I've done rock and roll dance, and I've had lots of musicians in my films. And so I thought of doing a film about music, but I wasn't sure what to do. Jonathan passed. Another filmmaker who is a good friend named Jim Jarmusch, we were having dinner one night, and he talked about this guitar store in Greenwich Village called Carmine Street Guitars, and he said, you know, you should check this place out. And if Jim Jarmusch tells you to check out a guitar store, you go. So I went to Carmine Street Guitars. Of course, Greenwich Village has been, you know, in the great mythology of music, you know, the folk scene, and then in the mid-60s, you know, with the Velvet Underground and, you know, John Sebastian living across the street, or Jimi Hendrix, you know, there, and Lenny Kaye working on Bleecker Street. And the Greenwich Village today is completely different. It actually reminded me of my street where I live in Toronto, where, you know, it's just changed completely. It's gentrification to, like, the max. And here was this store that doesn't even have a sign in the window. There's no hanging. Like, if you can walk by, there's a tree, a magical tree in front of this this facade. And then when you go in, it's like traveling back in time. Years earlier, Jim had given Rick Kelly, the custom guitar maker, wood from his loft that he was renovating. And that got Rick started on using wood, 200-year-old wood, salvaged from historical buildings in New York. And the guitars from this wood are very resonant, electric guitars. And so it was all just so magical being there. And I wanted to capture, I thought I'd like to preserve this before it all disappears. This, you know, I saw it as an oasis of honesty and beauty in the context of the barbarian invasion of urban yuppification. That's the way I would describe it.
Exactly. I mean, through the depiction of this beautiful stillness, you know, embodied in the shop, you actually tell so many stories, you know, going back in the past, like, what was New York, you know, when it was just a bunch of, like, little bars,
yeah.
And then the beautiful rise and shine of Greenwich Village, everyone was there, everything was incredibly spontaneous, and then the looming future, you know, the estate agent that passes by and checks how many square feet it is. At the same time, though, you have Cindy. And she is a beautiful portrayal of a good hope that we can see as well. You know, the return as well.
That's right. It would have been completely depressing if Cindy was not there, because it's about passing it on. If it all,
exactly.
You know, a lot of films are so depressing because there's no, you know, there's a dead end. You know, it's like Five Easy Pieces or Easy Rider, you know, at the very end where Dennis Hopper says, "We blew," or Peter Fonda says, "We blew it, man." You know, and that to me is, you know, I don't think we've kind of come out of that, actually, to be honest with you. I know I'm a very upbeat and hopeful sort of person. But yes, Cindy completely represents that even though the building will disappear, Cindy's going to carry on.
Cindy, so you can be brutally honest, don't worry. Ron will not listen to you right now. Like, was it kind of traumatic at the beginning, having this sort of, you know, intrusive little crew with artificial eyes on you all the time?
I mean, I was a little nervous, but I was more so excited that someone was doing the movie on Rick in the Shop, because I had been thinking about that for a long time, and I was telling him before, I don't even know if you knew that. I wasn't even on social media when I started the Carmine Street Guitars Instagram. I had deleted mine years ago. But I felt like that was really something, you know, that needed to be seen. So I got back into it, and it was important. But, I mean, I think it was just that I was nervous, but I was still really excited. I think it was more so Rick's thing that the shop was kind of a little bit of a wreck and, you know, the interruption and stop of things here and there. But it was really pretty great, I thought. Yeah.
Your relationship, you know, between you and Rick is beautiful. And maybe what really struck me was the unsaid things that you really perceive from watching, you know, like you two, one corner each, everyone does the job.
I haven't even seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, I did.
I haven't seen it.
And there's something really magical about your partnership in a way. You know, you can sit. Tell me just the very beginning.
Yeah, I don't have to see the movie to know that.
No, exactly. I mean, that's actually your story and your, like, how did it end up, like, you know, passing by the shop and be like, okay, I'm interested into this and.
I was following Rick for years before that. I had never been to the shop before I started working there. The day within 20 minutes that I stepped foot in that shop is when I started. I had never met Rick before, but I just was really interested in what he was doing and connected to what he was doing on, like, multiple levels with the reclaimed lumber, the history, you know, where he was and how he builds the guitars. So I had a guitar background, art background already. And I actually didn't know that he was originally went to art school. He went to college for sculpture. So he connected with me on that level when I went in and told him my story and said, you know, I want to learn. And the first thing he said was, I can't pay you. I've never had anybody work here. It's just me and my mother. And I was like, no. I don't need to get paid. You know, where I was at, I had gotten laid off from a suit and tie restaurant that I was bartending at just to make money, start off, and get an apartment in New York when I was 18. And their rent got doubled. They were an old school Italian restaurant, the second one, but the original one was in Rome. It was open 1913. So they were paying like 40 grand already for rent. And it got doubled to like 80 or 90,000. So I was in the position where it was like, what am I going to do right now? Am I going to try and do some more painting and get into galleries? Or, you know, am I going to try and do something like, you know, the luthiery? All the schools were out west, and I knew that, and I didn't want to go out west. I wanted to stay in New York. So I kind of just was like, all right. Me and Jimmy talked, actually, my friend Jimmy, who I think is... He's in the movie. And that's really how it happened. Jimmy pushed me to just go there, be myself, tell him the story, and tell him what I wanted to do. And he liked me. Yes.
I mean, you haven't watched the film, but Ron did. And, I mean, he made it.
I haven't seen the whole thing.
You haven't seen the final...
Okay, well, so I finished the movie.
I did the homework.
I've seen the movie many times, but not with an audience.
Right.
And that's a completely different experience of watching a movie. And the other, I finished the mix, and I needed a break. And I actually never saw the film in terms, as a whole.
Sure.
I've seen it in terms of details, like, you know, is the sound a little loud or soft, or, you know, is the color a little green, that sort of thing. So in its totality, but I don't know if I'll ever see it in that sense, in the in the sense that Jimi Hendrix probably never could experience Jimi Hendrix, or John Lennon never experienced what John Lennon is. Like, and so it's educational for me to like hear what people say about the film, because I know what the intention is. That when you see a movie also, everybody has a different, brings the experience to the film, their own personal experience to the film. And that's, you know, why you have all these different opinions about, you know, movies, which is great.
But this is actually extremely interesting, the power of the details sometimes, or even the dissection of a whole work. For example, you mentioned the sound, and I was astonished by the work, because it was like, I bet it wasn't as easy as...
No, as the audience watches a movie, and then they,
well, you know,
they
be
don't
a lot
consider
of,
that, you know, I spent like 6 weeks in a mix. By the way, I'm very lucky. I work with people that... incredibly talented people who make me look good. Keith Elliott, the sound mixer, for example, I've worked with since 1989, and he is brilliant. The editor, Robert Kennedy, I've worked with since 1986. And they're, you know, they're like a band. Like, the way I approach movies is like, you know, rock and roll. You know, and I have my, you know, Robert Kennedy's on keyboards, and you know, I might, you know, yeah, definitely Keith Elliott, the mixer, is like Keith Richards, you know, on guitar. I mean, he is like in a, and sonically, we always approach the movie first sonically, I think, in terms of music, and in this film you experience it naturally as the players come in and play and hang out. But there was also the Sadies, who I've worked with, a Canadian band, who do an underscore in the film. And then Mrs. Kelly, who has her own kind of, she listens to jazz in the front. It's a, you know, it's wonderful sonically how it all, yeah.
Singing?
I've heard her sing a couple times. And me and Rick stop, and we just look at each other, and we start cracking up. We don't say anything; we just let it happen.
She likes Glenn Miller. I think that was her, like, you
yeah,
know, and that
yeah.
was her, you know. And so we all, yeah. So the ambition was to make a music film that is in very much the style of, you know, well, of 5 days in the life of the store, and what it would be like for someone to walk in there and, you know, hang out at Carmine Street Guitars.
I mean, I feel like a bit, I'm in a privileged standpoint right now, because I watched it, the whole thing, and I hope you're going to enjoy it as much as I did. Thank you, guys.
Cool.
That was really
so
an amazing,
really
amazing
great.
Film. And thanks for being with us here at Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.